Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you could listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, France 24, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Public broadcasting in Europe may face the loss of government funding like what has happened in the U.S. An interview with the Director General of Reporters Without Borders, Thibaut Boutin, about the importance of public broadcasting and the European bill called the European Media Freedom Act, which recognizes citizens' rights to diverse sources of reliable information. The International Court of Justice has ruled that climate change is an existential threat and failing to protect the environment could be a violation of international law. The case centered around the sea level changes in Vanuatu, with Lucia Chulton reporting. Radio Deutsche Welle.
A new report from Reporters Without Borders is warning that Europe's publicly funded media could soon be facing funding threats. Its findings come hard on the heels of moves in the U.S. to limit public broadcasters. Congress recently passed a bill stripping media organizations of all taxpayer funding, which is part of a broader package of budget cuts. NPR and PBS will now lose more than $1 billion in public money. National Public Radio Chief Catherine Mayer called it a dismantling of civil institutions. And a new report suggests that Europe's publicly funded media could face a similar fate unless action is taken. Let's talk about that with Thibaut Boutin. He is the Director General at Reporters Without Borders and joins us now from Paris. Welcome to DW and thank you for your time. So we're hearing here that public broadcasters are under threat. There are some who might say, so what? They're too expensive anyway. Why do you think that they need to be saved?
I think it's important to remind people what is the ethos of public service media. They are the home of pluralism, of quality journalism, of investigation in many countries, and they have this specific duty towards the public. So, yes, we can discuss their policies and programs, definitely, and even more so because they are owned by the public. But some of the attacks against them are very harsh and not related to the actual behavior of the broadcaster. So we need to distinguish between the weaponization of the assault on public service media and the necessary rebuilding of public service media in the future.
So then break that down for us. What is the biggest challenge or the biggest challenges for European public broadcasters at the moment?
So there are two challenges. The first one is obviously the question of governance and how it can be instrumentalized to serve the interest of the ruling party or the government. And the second is the question of the funding. And for very good, legitimate management and financial management reasons, sometimes there are like strong decisions made against public broadcasters and campaign led against them. But we need to find, and that is the goal of the European Media Freedom Act, which is coming into effect on August 8th, to try and create a system that enable for the broadcasters to remain independent, both in governance and funding.
You have warned that financial reform is sometimes used as a cover, actually, for political control. How can it be distinguished between necessary reform and manipulation? And maybe you can just provide, some cases that you're seeing.
So, obviously, there is a momentum in current media history with the Trump administration. And the way Donald Trump is trying to fuel the hunger of the public towards the public broadcaster is totally unprecedented. because he's trying to kill journalism in the United States, he's obviously trying to say that the public service broadcasters are, you know, fat cats that need to be, you know, skinned. And that is not, you know, what facts prove. The budgets of public broadcasters in lots of countries are actually, you know, reduced under pressure. There is a concern that in the geopolitical and political moment that we're living through, that even the size of the public broadcaster is not big enough. We need to distinguish between people that have an agenda and people that actually want the best for the public service media.
Your report, it called for a sharp European awakening. I'm curious, because in less than a month, the European Media Freedom Act is coming into force. How do you see that factoring into the dynamics in the media landscape? Is it going to improve things?
It is meant to improve things, and the deadline of August 8, which is the date where the EMFA will come into effect, is a deadline that will not be met by many member states within the EU. That is highly, hugely problematic, and we still have a kind of appreciation of this legislation, which is prevalent in many member states. And this appreciation is that the EMFA was designed so as to address the challenges of the media and journalism within Central Europe, where it's you know, very much under attack. But every member state has to look into its own policies and regulation. And there is no member state that is you know, having such a great regulatory framework that they don't need to revise or review it. So we're calling on every EU member state to look into the national legislation and try to find ways to improve the situation, to guarantee also for the future, obviously, the independence and the stability of the funding of the broadcasters, but also more generally, try to address the many articles of the EMFA, which is a good, strong framework to look into the policies in every EU member state.
Thibault Boutin, Director General at Reporters Without Borders.
The UN's highest court has ruled that climate change is an urgent and existential threat. The ruling came in response to a case brought by the island state of Vanuatu. The court added that failing to protect the planet from the effects of climate change could be a violation of international law.
The court concludes that the duty of states to prevent significant environmental harm applies in the context of climate change, and that this duty forms part of the most directly relevant applicable law. Concerning the duty to cooperate, the court recalls that it lies at the core of the Charter of the United Nations and has been spelled out in the Foundational Declaration on Friendly Relations.
Our correspondent Lucia Schulten is at the court in The Hague. Lucia, what more can you tell us about the court's ruling?
Yes, so today's ruling is really considered to be a landmark ruling. So first of all, and maybe most importantly, the court did state that there are certain rules when it comes to climate protections, as they are stated in the Climate Convention by the UN or also in the Paris Climate Agreement, which are legally binding. These rules are, for example, that states have to mitigate the effects of emissions, or also that they do have to meet the targets which are set out in the Paris Climate Agreement. These are legally binding obligations and are not just for states to follow or not. This is the first thing. The second thing, and maybe when it comes to the consequences, even more importantly, a state can be held accountable for breaching these obligations under the normal state liability. That means if it does do a wrongful act by breaching one of the obligations which it has, could be held accountable by paying reparations. If there is a causal link between an action it does and the damage which is caused, this link needs to be proven. But nevertheless, it did open the door to reparations under the climate, rules that the court talked about more in detail about. And this will also be studied by a lot of lawyers now, what this actually means. But this is the gist of what happened here today.
Did this ruling meet the expectations of the country that brought the challenge, Vanuatu?
Yes, so this was brought here by Vanuatu, but behind this was also a group of students that started rallying for this 6 years ago. And we have just heard from Vanuatu and also from one of the students. They were saying that it did meet their expectations. They called this also landmark ruling. They seemed very happy with the results. And I think it's fair to say also this, one of the students was speaking out saying that this is a lifeline for young people. So I think it's very fair to say that they have achieved their goal and that they were satisfied with the result today.
In practical terms, what does this mean for the world's biggest polluters?
That is a bit the thing, because we have an opinion here, which means that it's not really that the court said, well, country XYZ, you're not allowed to do this or that anymore. But it does mean that there is now an authoritative, like a way of an interpretation out there by the world's highest court, which other states could use to come here to the court and sue a court where they think they're in breach of their legal obligations. But it does also mean that basically everybody that wants to fight a climate case could, you know, take this and use it as an argument in another dispute that he might have in front of a court. So, and this is also what is widely been expected here by the activists that were behind it, that they were saying, well, this can be used as legal argumentation, but they also expect this to be used when it comes to, you know, COPs, when people go for these big climate conferences and so far, and that then somebody would just say, but you know what, we have this paper here and it does say this is a legal obligation, so we are not here to beg, this is actually something you have to do.
Mm-hmm. So this can be used as precedent. Are there other countries already waiting in the wings? Does this case end here, or are we expecting a ripple effect around the globe?
Really, the consequences of who's going to use it and where this is going to be used, this will really still, this needs to be seen, and people will see how they use it in a legal way. The case itself is over. But what will happen, and we have heard this already from the climate change minister of Vanuatu, they will bring this back to the United General Assembly and follow up on this and ask for a resolution. And they will keep on campaigning for what they call climate justice and make their case whenever they can. So the case itself is settled, but this might just be the beginning of more and more cases which will base itself on this new legal advisory opinion by the World Court.
That was Lucia Shulton at the International Court of Justice in The Hague. Thanks so much, Lucia.
Those interviews were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. Also, most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. The South Pacific island of Tuvalu is expected to be underwater in the coming decades, and Australia has offered some climate visas for its residents. The Trump administration has told UNESCO that they are withdrawing from the agency. 28 countries, including Japan and the European Union, have called for an immediate ceasefire and distribution of aid in Palestine. NHK Japan.
The South Pacific island nation of Tuvalu is one of the most vulnerable to the threat of rising seas due to climate change. Many of its citizens fear the country could be completely submerged. As a result, half the population has applied for visas to go live in Australia. This comes after the two governments signed a treaty in 2023 over migration and security. It allows up to 280 people a year to come to Australia, chosen randomly by ballot. The initial application process for next year closed on Friday, and a great number of people applied. Australia's government says it received over 5,000 applications. That's about half the population. The final selection for people to get permanent residency will be made by lottery through January next year. The chosen individuals will have the right to work and receive education and medical care in Australia. Most of the territory of Tuvalu's archipelago is less than 2 meters above sea level. The United Nations estimates by the year 2100, 95%, including the capital, could be underwater at high tide. The United States has informed UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, it'll withdraw from the agency. The U.S. State Department said Tuesday, UNESCO works to advance divisive social and cultural causes and called its agenda at odds with our America First foreign policy. It also questioned UNESCO's decision to admit Palestine as a member state. President Donald Trump also pulled out of UNESCO during his first administration, citing the agency's anti-Israel bias.
28 countries, including Japan, as well as the European Union, have called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The countries issued a joint statement calling on Israel to immediately lift restrictions on the flow of aid, as well as enable the UN and humanitarian NGOs to do their life-saving work safely and effectively. It also urged the international community to unite in a common effort to bring this terrible conflict to an end, and added that further bloodshed serves no purpose. Hamas has issued a statement welcoming the appeal. This comes amid growing civilian casualties in Gaza. Local media reported on Monday that Israeli ground forces are operating in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza for the first time since October 2023.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. as well as most podcast sites. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to France 24. Mexico City is seeing large protests against gentrification caused by immigrants with more money moving into rental units. More than 100 aid organizations are warning about the man-made mass starvation being created in Palestine. An interview with Israeli reporter Noga Tarnoplasky. France 24.
In Mexico City, the message from these protesters is clear. Gentrification equals displacement, not progress. After taking to the streets earlier this month, residents in Mexico City kept up their movement on Sunday. Many say they've been priced out of their neighborhoods, in part due to short-term rentals and an influx of people and businesses with higher purchasing power.
What we're demanding is a law that defends the right to be rooted and a law that defends housing as a common good.
A study published last year that looked at housing in Mexico City between 2000 and 2022 found that affordability plummeted, with prices in some neighborhoods increasing by eightfold, all while incomes declined. Last week, Mexico City's government announced a 14-point plan to combat the displacement of residents and businesses. Among the measures is the regulation of rental prices and creating an ombudsman office for tenants' rights. However, it's done little to placate protesters.
We're here with the working class, with the population, to demonstrate to this government that from the outside it says it supports the people, the working class, but in its actions it supports landlords, the real estate speculators, and the bankers.
The march was accompanied by a heavy police presence after some people in previous demonstrations vandalized stores in wealthier neighborhoods with anti-immigration graffiti. Much of the anger has been directed towards expats from the United States, particularly those who are paid in dollars and have higher purchasing power. Activists are also bracing for when Mexico co-hosts the FIFA World Cup in 2026, which they fear could lead officials to prioritize business dealings over residents.
More than 100 aid organizations are warning that mass starvation is spreading across Gaza. As a result, Israel's facing mounting international pressure over the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Palestinian territory, where more than 2 million people face severe shortages of food and other essentials. This, as the US says, its envoy, Steve Witkoff, will head to Europe this week for talks on Gaza and then may head to the Middle East. Joining me now from Jerusalem is Noga Tarnoplasky. Noga, foreign journalists, as you and I know, are banned from entering Gaza. So from where you are in Jerusalem, what are you hearing about the current situation?
All journalists are banned from Gaza except those inside Gaza, who Israel has really delegitimized as being Hamas members. What we know is that the situation seems to be rapidly deteriorating. In other words, there are no ways for food to get into Gaza or essential aid except currently through this Gaza Humanitarian Foundation that Israel founded, that is staffed by American ex-military, and it is failing to do the job. People are getting killed, huddling around these hubs that this foundation has founded. The UN now says that 1,000 people have died in the 2 months since this new mysterious entity was founded, and no other methods of getting food are permitted. The Israeli army yesterday claimed that there are hundreds of food trucks waiting to get in and that it is not getting the cooperation needs from the UN. On the other hand, it must be said that Israel has banned the UN from acting on its territory and just 2 days ago refused to give a visa, renew the visa of the top UN official. So there seems to be a bit of a cross-messaging between the UN and Israel on that. But the situation for civilians in Gaza that was kept by Israel, it seems, on the precipice of a real famine for much of the past year, has now really spilled over into a situation that in which there's really no control. And Israel is facing massive demands internationally and increasingly internally to allow food unfettered into Gaza.
And with that said, what has been their response so far?
The Israeli government is simply not responding. It seems to inhabit an alternate space. The Israeli government's principal activity today is an attempt to fire the chairman of the Knesset, the parliament's Foreign Affairs and Security Committee, who belongs to the prime minister's ruling party. The prime minister is spearheading an effort to fire him so as to try to ensure ultra-Orthodox Jewish members of the prime minister's coalition the ability to evade the universal draft law in Israel. And this, as soldiers continue to die every day in Gaza, it's causing a mass uproar in Israel, and it is allowing the government to more or less ignore the demands both from Israeli protesters and from Israeli allies around the world that this war must come to an end.
Nogatan Noposky reporting there from Jerusalem. Thank you.
Those reports were from France 24, which may be found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could help support this program like a subscriber in Willits, California did this week, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever donated to keep this freely distributed show in the airwaves. Please help if you can. And if you're listening to a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Under cuts from the Trump administration, the EPA, that's the Environmental Protection Agency, will shut down its scientific research branch. Police in the UK have now arrested more than 100 citizens for holding signs saying that they support the group Palestine Action, a pro-Palestinian group that disrupts the arms industry in the UK. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA in the United States, has announced that it will shut down its scientific research arm. The move has sparked widespread backlash from public health experts and climate advocates who warn that this could lead to the dismantling of protections that shield communities from hazardous chemicals, water contaminants, and toxic pollution. Gretchen Goldman, president of the Union of Concerned Scientists, said in a statement, "The nation, the United States, enjoys a cleaner environment thanks to the decades of high-quality research coming out of this office. This nation cannot let this stand." This comes as the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, is also seeking to delay monitoring and cleanup requirements for toxic coal ash, allowing coal plants to stall cleanup beyond the year 2030. Police in the UK have arrested more than 100 protesters who had taken to the streets across the country calling for a ban on the campaign group Palestine Action to be reversed. Demonstrations took place in Manchester, Edinburgh, Bristol, and London as part of a campaign coordinated by Defend Our Juries, which has already seen dozens arrested. London's Metropolitan Police said 55 people were arrested in Parliament Square for displaying placards in support of Palestine Action. A further 8 arrests were made in a separate march in central London to support the group Palestine Action. The Met Police said that 70 people were also arrested at similar demonstrations in Parliament Square over the past 2 weeks. Greater Manchester Police said at least 18 people on suspicion of supporting an illegal organization. Police said other arrests were made under this Terrorism Act at demonstrations at College Green in Bristol. Just a few weeks ago, being arrested under the Terrorism Act was a stiff nightmare, one spokesperson said for Defend Our Juries. Now, he said, it's a badge of honor that people are wearing with pride, the mark of resistance to genocide and standing firm for our democratic freedoms. At the time of this reporting, a total of 106 people had been detained. UK police warned before the protests that those showing any support for the illegal activist group Palestine Action faced arrest and prosecution. The ban means that membership of, support of, or any direct action group is now a criminal offense, punishable in the UK up to 14 years in prison. Under the Terrorism Act of 2000, putting the group on a par with armed groups in the region. Authorities have beefed up police presence in Westminster in the wake of the rallies. Palestine Action describes itself as a pro-Palestinian organization that disrupts with direct action the arms industry in the UK for supporting genocide against Gaza.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. And you do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report's been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recovering from spinal injuries and staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.